Welcome to a new edition of Mercenary Musings Radio, a bi-weekly audio program featuring mining analyst and commodities expert, the mercenary geologist Mickey Fulk. We are your most trusted source for in-depth analysis and commentary on commodities, mining, and the junior resource sector. And Mickey, for the first time in quite some time, you are at home base. You've had a very busy few weeks on both sides of the North American continent, from damp, cloudy, cool Vancouver to a hot and steamy New York City, now a downright hot Albuquerque, New Mexico. How you been keeping?
Well, I'm hot right now, but don't discount snow in the Yukon on this trip, too. So it was a fun trip, lots of work and a little bit of vacation, but it's good to be back home in the desert. It's 37 degrees here right now,
wow.
But it's bone dry at 11%. So it's probably like going outside and sticking your head in the oven, Rob.
Oh, man, I don't mind that at all. Up here in Toronto, 37 degrees sounds great for me. Last time out, Mickey, we mentioned that we were going to zero in on potassium for today's program. Very soft metal, the second least dense metal after lithium. Tell us a little bit more about its characteristics, when it was first discovered, and some history.
Well, it's number 19 on the periodic table, which explains its low density. One of these alkali metal plus one cation sort of things. It's, again, soft silvery white, as these things tend to be. Its salts are very similar to sodium, which we talked about last time.
Mm-hmm.
Both metals were thought to be one until they were isolated in 1807. So our talk today is somewhat of a revisit, because we talked about potash last August,
mm-hmm.
and that is the main use of potassium.
Yeah, the main use of potassium, potash. Today, farmers need this stuff. Very important fertilizer for agricultural purposes. I believe more than 90% of it is consumed that way. Big difference from the beginning, I think, when they were more or less into bleach, soap, and the production of glass. But expand for us further, Mickey, on the importance of potash in the farming community today.
Well, it's necessary for all plant and animal life, principles of osmosis and nerve function in animals and electrolytic balance, etc. So that's the main use, fertilizers and feed supplements. And it is very common, potassium, in the Earth's crust, about 2.6%, mainly as rock-forming minerals such as feldspars and micas and clays.
Mm-hmm.
But it also exists in nature as ionic salts, and that's where the potash comes in. And it's dissolved in seawater to a high extent. And in some instances, potash can be derived from seawater.
Okay, now the first mineral deposits, Mickey, containing potash, I understand, were found in Germany back in the 1800s. Potash is still mined in Germany, but the real dominant player in this particular part of the mining industry is Canada, isn't it?
It is, and but along with Russia, Canada produces, I think, about almost twice as much as Russia does. But Canada, Russia, Belarus, Germany, where it was first found,
mm-hmm.
the U.S., where it was first developed in North America, my home state of New Mexico, and then I mentioned previously, it's dissolved in seawater, so in bodies such as the Dead Sea, Israel and Jordan mine significant amounts of potash from brines there.
Mm-hmm. What is the current supply-demand situation like on a global scale? Because this is something that is needed the world over. There are more mouths to feed. We need fertilizer to grow the crops so that we can all eat. What is the current situation like concerning supply and demand for potash?
Well, it comes and it goes. So it's somewhat of a discretionary item, dependent on world economic health. So the amount of potash that's put on fields, especially in row crops, varies from year to year. For instance, in 2008-2009, we saw quite a drop in potash production because farmers were unable to generate the capital, and there was very high prices during that period of time,
mm-hmm.
so they just cut back on their potash use. So there's plenty of potash in the world, there's no problem with that, but it's very much driven as a bulk mineral commodity by the price, and the price has varied considerably over the last 5 years or so. Pre-2008, we saw a worldwide price of $160 a ton.
Mm-hmm.
That jumped to a high of $870 in 2008 and dropped to a low of $310 a ton post-economic crisis. Now we're looking at a 52-week range-bound price of somewhere in the mid to high 400s, currently trading about $458 a ton.
Okay, so that's pretty good. That's pretty good on a historic basis. But what was the story back in 2008 that had it going right to the moon at $870?
Well, it's again one of these things where there became a potash boom. There was some temporary shortages. We have 75 million more people, more mouths to feed every year on the planet, and we talked about this before in August. Mm-hmm. As emerging market countries go more and more to a protein-based diet, then you need more fertilizer because it takes about 7 kilograms of plant material to produce 1 kilogram of meat. So what we're seeing is increased usage, especially in emerging market countries.
What about this sector of the mining industry for its investing potential, Mickey? We all know about the major producers such as Potash Corporation, but also this is a very busy area of mining for a lot of juniors, isn't it?
Well, it is, and there's many exploration projects scattered in various parts of the world. The U.S. has significant resources, but they're generally deep, and those occur in places like Utah, Michigan, and Arizona. In New Mexico, we have this development with a polyhalite deposit, which is a deposit in the historic Carlsbad production area, but it's a different mineral and there are really rich beds there. So one thing which we talked about before and we'll mention again here, there are two types of potash that are produced, muriate of potash, which is potassium chloride, which is used mainly in row crops, and then there's sulfate of potash, which is used in dry and alkaline saline soils, and it's usually used for crops that are not planted in rows and crops that are salt sensitive, so things such as citrus, nuts, and then some specialty crops like tobacco and potatoes that are very salt sensitive. What's happened in the junior resource sector is there are some viable companies out there that are searching for potash. Active ones that I know include several companies, or a few companies I should say, in Saskatchewan, mm-hmm. with both room and pillar style conventional mines and then solution mine exploration or development projects. No one mining at this point. We already mentioned the one in New Mexico. There's a company in the Holbrook Basin of Arizona. There's a couple of companies in Eritrea, and they're very shallow deposits there, but then again, Rob, it's Eritrea, so that carries significant geopolitical risk. The problem I see with the juniors is, what's your exit strategy? And there really is essentially one exit strategy in this business, and that's find a partner, because the CapEx of these projects is huge. We're talking high nine figures to well into the 10-figure or $1 billion CapExes, and that's beyond the realm of anything a junior can hope to do. Yep. So then you've got to find a partner, either a major mining company, a sovereign fund, or a sovereign country that is looking for more potash to feed the millions.
Okay, well, that brings up one final question, Mickey. Then in scouting out the possibility of investing in a junior, would you confine the search then more or less to juniors who have properties that are next door to a major producer, in that, on the belief that perhaps if the junior does find something that might be mineable, you would think that perhaps the big boy sitting next door might look at them as a takeout target?
Well, that's certainly a possibility, but by the same token, a lot of these big potash companies have enough right now. So you certainly, as with most major projects, you want to be in past producing areas because it's easier to permit, it's more acceptable, and you have the ability to understand the way that development mining needs to occur in a specific area. So my gut feeling is that, yes, you probably want to stick in known potash districts. So of the ones I mentioned, that probably puts Saskatchewan and New Mexico ahead of the couple of others.
Okay, well, let's wrap it up on that note. Mickey, we're going to do it all over again in 2 weeks from now. What do you want to talk about?
Well, we're going to work our way to the end, I think, of the alkali metals. We've got three of them to go as we're working our way down the periodic table. So that's cesium, rubidium, and a really obscure metal called francium. And we've already done a show on lithium, which is a top one. We at some point may visit the lithium market, kind of a retrospect of what happens to the lithium boom and the death knell that sounded for the majority of companies very quickly in that bubble.
Okay, sounds good, Mickey. We'll reconnect in a couple of weeks.
Okay, thanks a lot, Rob.
That's Mickey Fulp, the Mercenary Geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com. And you can always hear Mickey's latest opinion exclusively on mercenarygeologist.fm and kitco.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.